This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors of our dominant culture and parent with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of The Family Culture Movement with John Pizonis, who is the author of Kid Trillionaire. He wrote this book when he was 13, and he is now 16 and earning money online. I want to welcome to this show today, Ella Hunkins. Ella is a sought-after leadership speaker, consultant, trainer, and coach. His recent book, Cracking the Leadership Code, Three Secrets to Building Strong Leaders, launched as the number one best-selling new release in business communication on Amazon. Over his 20-year career, Ella has led over 2,000 groups in 25 countries. Welcome, Ella. So excited to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Jody. I am so excited to be with you today.
I'm excited. Okay, so here's my icebreaker question that I like to ask my guests. What did you want to be when you were a kid?
Wow, like when I was a kid, like when I was going to grow up.
Yeah, what did you want to be
when I was a kid? I think I just wanted to be a kid.
Yeah, true. To face that question, right?
You know, it's a funny thing, but somehow what I wanted to be when I grew up was I wanted to be happy. Now, that's a really odd response, but somehow my grandmother, and there's a whole backstory I won't get into now. My grandmother was like, whatever you do in life, be happy. And I think I internalized that. So it wasn't so much about some external thing. It was this internal sense of be happy in who you are and how you show up.
I love that answer because honestly, I think you just cracked the code of why I asked this question because of the social conditioning that we get even from young kids that we are defined by our career or our vocation or some label that we get, and how much I think that it's fascinating that we get that label assigned to us even from being a small child and then judged based on whether or not we attain that goal. My follow-up question to that is, how has that inspired you into who you've become?
Well, that's a great follow-up, which is, so for me, I have been very much internally driven. And in fact, as I discovered what makes me happy is actually helping other people discover their purpose. Like, there's nothing that lights me up more than helping people, you know, and we call it leadership. In my mind, leadership isn't a title. It's not a job title or a position, something you put on a business card. Leadership is a state of being. It's a way of thinking. And the fact is, all of us in our lives have to work with other people, either formally or informally, in the home, at work, at school, anywhere. And so anytime you're trying to mobilize yourself and or others to create some shared purpose, that takes leadership. So for me, it's very broad. And so nothing lights me up more than helping people to go, oh, these are skills. I can learn this. And when I do, I can be more effective and I have more agency and I have more fun and I create a stronger, healthier community, you know, whether it's in the family or the community at large. So
exactly.
For me, that has led me on that path. And it's also taken away a lot of the kind of need to keep up with the Joneses, right? The societal, like, I need to have this car, I need to like make this much money. And, you know, I have two kids now that are 16 and 13, and I am thrilled that I like to say I'm on the slow track to success, because to me, the slow track is what's important. Like, they're going to be leaving the house in a couple of years. I don't go, oh, I should have been working harder. I mean, I took time off when they were both born. I made some choices to move to a less geographically dense area where the cost of living was lower. I was in New York City and I thought, you know, I can choose time or money. I'm going to choose time because I can't get that back.
Well, that's so real wealth if you have time,
that's,
right?
That's it. So for me, that has very much informed how I look at the question. Being happy has shaped who I am and the choices I made.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's amazing. And I love it, you know, that you define leadership of you know, when you have a shared goal, you got to be able to have somebody leading out in that. And that speaks so much to my mission about family culture that, you know, we as parents or even the kids, every one of us really should be a culture leader in our home to lead out of on the values and the behaviors and beliefs that we want to implement in our families. And it takes good leadership skills. So I'm really excited to dive into this topic with you. Yeah, so my question is, what is one dysfunctional belief or behavior in the dominant culture that you believe needs to change?
I love this. Such a juicy question. So for me, I want to start by looking at when you say, we say culture, because I have a very, specific sense of what I think culture ultimately is, the series of behaviors of how we do stuff around here. So we're looking at, okay, so what's one main behavior that has shaped this whole grouping of behaviors that we're calling culture? And so for me, this has been very informed by, as much as I want to say it's been my work, it's actually been in my choice of life partner, my wife, Mary, because I would say this one behavior that shows up in the family. And I think it'll be interesting to see if we evolve. You know, we look now back in the medical profession from 150 years ago, like they used to use leeches to bloodlet. Like that's insane. Like, what were they thinking? Like, you know, these kind of torture devices. And now we look at medicine as being so advanced where, you know, 100 years from now, they'll look at what we do now and go, well, that's crazy. So I bring that all up because I think that one thing that we're going to look back on, hopefully in 50, 100 years, is the behavior of basically engaging in power struggle with children. So what I mean by that is, think about it. And like any parent in the world knows, there are those moments when your fuse is short, when you're tired, where do we default to? Just do this because I'm your mom or I'm your dad. That's why, right? Because I say so. And that power struggle gets internalized where we end up, and I'll use the words, where we are the perpetrator of that power and there's a victim. And usually it's the adult to the child. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening when we create these perpetrator-victim dynamics of power struggle is that people internalize that and then they start to rebel against it. And when they get into basically the role of the parent, because it's been so deeply internalized. And I do a lot of work with people on the personal level. And I can see that if they share their stories and unpack these stories and realize how much internalized hurt and pain and shame may have come along with that, it's so much easier than just to go, oh, God, I'm in the power role. My turn. I get to now do this to my kids. And I totally recognize this in myself, you know, and where I did it. Now, I was lucky enough to choose a partner who was very clear. So my wife, Mary, remembers the moment. Now, I don't. I blacked this all out. And maybe other people did or not. But she remembers, she calls them the golden years until she was about 6 years old, where everything she did was perfect. And her dad could do no wrong. He was on a mountain. And then probably about the time she was six, suddenly her parents had these different expectations and they kind of started to resort to, Mary, you need to do this. And she remembered just shrinking away and saying, when I'm an adult, I will never behave this way. She remembered that. Now, I don't remember that. I just internalized it. And she said, I am not going to raise my kids that way. And so I've had her as this wonderful leader, this role model who has shown me the way. And she is so much better at that than I am. Now, look, I got to admit, I've gotten better over the last 16 years. But what I've seen in her is, wow, like basically treating children, not like they're your peers, but treating them with a respect and not resorting to this, that, you know, that power thing that's like, come on, you got like this. She doesn't go there with the kids. And it takes an infinite amount of patience. It means saying no to a lot of other things. And that's the challenge. And I see it in my, and I'll just give you an example of where this really came out for me. So my son, Alex, is 16. When he was probably about three or so, I remember I was on duty to get him to, I want to say preschool. And it was a rainy, cold October day. And anyone who's had kids knows what it's like to kind of get the rain galoshes on the little one and then like the boots and stuff. And we're running late. And for whatever reason, I'm the one who's taking this on. Like, come on. And as I'm getting him dressed and he's, you know, he's trying to get his boots on and I'm getting more stressed. And I'm like, come on, Alex, we got to go. And I'm right. And my voice gets because I somehow get triggered because I mean, I was raised by parents, not untypical. It's like, come on, like screaming was par for the course. That's not that unusual. Come on. So I just went there and I, boom. And before I know it, my son is looking at me, bawling his eyes out, just like, I can't do this. And I felt horrible, like so much shame. Like, this is exactly what I know I don't want to do. And I've just created this. And I felt terrible. And I got him off. And it was just felt like, oh, well, like we'll live to fight another day. That felt like a big dad fail to me. And I called my wife later and I said, this is, and I explained the situation, what was going on. And she said, I really hear you on that. Let me ask you, what did you do? Knowing it was raining outside, What did you do to stop whatever it was you're doing an extra 15 minutes earlier and set Alex up for success? And so to me, this is what the solution is about, is like, are you willing to create an environment where you don't have the power struggle, you know, where you just shape it so you're helping him or her to succeed? Like if I had come and said, oh, you know, we got to get their stuff on so that we're not having the same level of stress, so that we can get the tension out of the system. Now I realized like what I'm speaking about is kind of an ideal. And I know, look, parents, we have lives, we have jobs, we have other obligations. But I think having this as an ideal or a principle to strive for might change how we think about it. Because whenever I talk with people, they say, oh, well, you know, the terrible twos, that's just what's going to happen. Or just wait until they're teenagers. It's going to happen. And again, I'm going to give my wife 99% of the credit. But there were no terrible twos. My kids are amazing now. I mean, there is no, because there's nothing, there's no teenage rebellion because we haven't given them anything to rebel against. Mm-hmm. And I think, so I bring this up because, gosh, I see it in the workplace all the time. You know, I do a lot of work in business environments and it's just amazing how people get into the role. I'm now the senior manager. I have the title and it's like, come on. And they don't mean to do it, but it's amazing because it so becomes hardwired into us because we've repeated those behavior patterns so much.
Yeah.
So there you go. That is my answer to your question.
No, that's awesome. 100%. I love that because it's like, I know that struggle.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating that it comes down to a leadership skill to know how to manage your time, to be able to implement the things that you want for your kids with intention, you know, not, oh my gosh, last minute, we've got to get out the door or whatever the thing is. There's always a thing, whatever it is that is your agenda. That's, you know, it's ringing in our ears and the back of our head. I have an agenda. They are supposed to keep that agenda. Why aren't they getting with the program?
Yeah.
But we're hardwired to be like, well, I'm the boss. They should just listen to me and do as I say. And that just deteriorates, like you said, their willpower, but it attacks their autonomy in a way that they feel like, well, I'm going to fight back against this. I must be a victim.
Yeah.
To this. And, yep. So that leads me to ask though, like if that's the case and it's so easy to be like, well, I just need to step back. Well, in my mind, I hear the voices of my past parenting mistakes and other parents going, well, if I don't be the boss, then they're just going to walk all over me.
Well, this is,
What do we do?
I love you brought this up because this is the thing, like, oh, you're coddling your kids. What are you, some kind of snowflake? I mean, this is the argument. It's like, oh, like, no, it's not about coddling. It's about training. It's about in training them over time. And it's just taking the patience up front. So you have to have some really clear expectations. So, you know, in the business world, we talk about this whole sense of, you know, you've got to hold people accountable. Like, you know, people have commitments and you got to, yes, you do, but you can't really hold no one else accountable to something that they haven't committed to themselves. So for me, this is all about co-creating some agreements with the kids up front, which means being much more verbal and explicit and intentional than most of us are used to because we've had so little modeling in this way. But this is the idea, is like at each stage of life. Now look, modeling with a 3-year-old is going to be very different than it is with a 16-year-old. But in terms of what's acceptable or not, because you create this respect, then there's a trust in you that when you say no, there's a reason. Right. And then you have to be firm and clear with the boundaries so they know what's okay and what's not okay, you know, and giving them some freedom or choice within that. So, I mean, I'm always blown away with, you know, you see a lot with parents who come to kids and like basically make the kid, you know, like, so where do you think we should go on vacation? It's like, whoa, like my parent, like that's out, like that's huge. Like, hold on. Like, and then like, if the kid says, I want to go to Disneyland, we can't afford Disneyland. Why? He's like, whoa, you just set yourself up for failure. You know, I just remember the thing of like when my daughter who was, you know, came, you know, we thought we would be kind of equal gender opportunity. They can wear whatever. And of course she was kind of classic, wanted pink and princess stuff. But I remember like, you know, she was very particular about clothes. So basically, you know, if you think about giving choice within a framework. So in the morning, getting dressed, Miranda. So do you want to wear your pink outfit or your blue outfit? You see, she has choice, but it's within a limited framework. You know, I didn't say what, you know, because otherwise we're opening things too up. And so kids do, in fact, do well with limited choices, because otherwise it overwhelms them. And actually adults, that we'd say the same thing. There's a wonderful book called The Paradox of Choice by a psychologist named Barry Schwartz that explores this, that when we have too much choice, it leads to helplessness and actually begins to potentially impact depression. So all of which to say is we need to step back and have really clear expectations and set those with people. And then the other thing is when children succeed, we need to energize the positivity with a level of energy that usually only gets brought up around negativity. I mean, and I love it. I forget where we learned this, but if you just think about where do you know, if people tend to go with where the energy is, I mean, in most families, and certainly my family growing up, like when could I get my parents really excited and like energized and focused on me? They say, Ella, make your bed. They're like yelling, like, rah, rah, like that. Like, I never heard, Ella, you're amazing. That's so wonderful. You did so well. Like, wouldn't it be great if we could flip the script? Because imagine, because again, neurologically, when we are energizing that kind of negativity, we are hardwiring in the sense of, you know, shame, criticism, you know, like all these mistakes. So it's really thinking about changing how we work. And that starts with clarity of expectations.
Wow. Wow. So what I hear you saying is being able to present our children with reasonable choices and clarifying the boundaries, because that's really, I mean, we all need boundaries. If we're just allowed to roam free, then like you said, it leads to anxiety, it leads to stress, it leads to depression. Yeah. And then the last thing you said was praise them. Wow. That's so powerful. Like that seems like it's, you know, it is really a simple framework that you can apply this consistently every time. You know, when you were talking, what came to my mind was, you know, we have regular chores, jobs with my kids and you know, we're like, hey, clear the table after breakfast. Well, that's direction, but it's not necessarily a clear direction, because then they just go and dump all their leftover food into the sink and all their, mom and dad end up going, oh, and cleaning out the dishes and having to, and whatever, all these things. But what we really need to do is clarify and say, when you clear your dish, make sure you rinse it out and put it in the dishwasher. You know, so like, it's just clarifying like the training, like you said, it's like a teaching opportunity. Every time you get triggered or you feel a discouragement, well, then they're obviously not on the same page of what you with you on your expectation. And you just need to clarify that.
Yeah, basically. Very much so. Because what clarity does, it creates mental comfort. And with the mental comfort, people feel safe. Like the same thing with boundaries. Boundaries make people feel safe. They can relax. And at a neurological level, the central nervous system can calm down. Because when we are all triggered, whether it's parents or children or workers, employees, boss, doesn't matter. When we're triggered, we no longer have access to our executive functioning. So we can't actually relate to each other very well. And so I love the fact that you talk about this idea of needing to clarify, you know, what does clearing the table look like? And obviously, there's going to be different skills. Like, you're not going to ask a three-year-old to scour out the used pan. They're not capable. Or, you know, unscrew the blender and clean. Like, they can't, they don't have the body mechanics to do that, but they can bring something over. And then it's this, so this is what we call this whole idea of mentoring, you know, as people learn how to upskill and along the way, continuing to energize the positivity and show them how they're growing and developing. And then for you to step back, you know? And so, I mean, I think this is one of the challenges in leadership, is that ultimately, if you do a great job at this, pretty soon you'll be out of a job. Right. At a certain level, because they have been freed up. They don't need you at that level. And I think another shadow behavior that leads to this is there are a lot of people who need to be needed, that somehow, because that keeps them in control, right? It's that letting go of control. And really, if you think about it, we're not raising children. We're raising adults who happen to be children now, but the end goal is to raise, you know, autonomous, independent, free thinking and free living adults.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so powerful. And when you brought up that being triggered and how it neurologically, we shut down, we go into that like fight, flight or freeze phase. Exactly. We're not thinking straight. We can't, you know, we're in an emotional state of being. We can't logically consume what's happening to us. And so it's like, but again, that comes back to this idea of us as parents being leaders, because we need to be able to figure out when or to notice and recognize when that's happening and be able to draw back a little bit and be like, okay, wait, let's reset. Let's breathe. Let's get our, you know, logical side of our brains back intact so that we can think through this, you know, because so many times when we were triggered, we just become reactive and then it just deteriorates from there.
Yeah.
And then you're lost. You're just lost in this friction and power struggle like you're talking about.
No, I love the fact you talked, Jody, about this sense of you have to be aware. You know, self-awareness is the fundamental competency of emotional intelligence. And so if you're not emotionally intelligent to notice like, wow, I'm being triggered right now, you're in it. Now, look, I'm not going to say that there's some magic wand that you kind of evolve to the point where you're never triggered by anything. I mean, I wish I was that way. I'm not even close. However, with practice and developing emotional intelligence, you can find yourself getting triggered less often, less intensely, and for shorter durations of time. Because when we are in a perpetual triggered state, anytime you're in that high emotion, first of all, you tend to not accept responsibility for what's going on. And in an adult-child relationship, at those moments, it's so easy then just to, who's the weak link? Just point to the child. They're power, like they're the minor, they're the legal custodian of you. So you can point it all on them and throw all of that triggering emotional crap onto them. And they have no choice in the situation but to take it, and they'll either comply and internalize that in some way. Mm. And at a certain point, they will rebel, or if they don't rebel, they'll just
shut down.
Try to shut down. And then they'll be, you know, kind of maybe potentially in therapy for years figuring this out, which they may be anyway. But, you know,
I'm pretty sure everybody needs therapy at some point. So that's okay.
Well, the idea is, I mean, what is therapy? Therapy is about helping you to become more self-aware. I mean, that's where it starts from. And I had a wonderful mentor, and I come back to this phrase almost every time I talk about it, which is you can't change what you don't notice. This is why awareness is such a powerful tool. If we say we want to have better lives and better families and make our family more loving and connected, well, you got to be aware of where are you starting from? And the way you can, and I don't think you can ascend to the heights of this wonderful family until you're willing to plumb the depths of the muck and the dirt and like what triggers you and what triggers me, and having honest conversations and not attaching all of this shame to like, but we're airing our dirty laundry. Like, no, this is what we're doing is we're actually unpacking some baggage that's no longer serving us. And if we want to move forward
without judgment,
exactly, right? We need to do that. And ideally, you know, if you could do that yourself, great. If you can do it with your partner, great. If you need a coach or a therapist or someone, great. But the point is, at some point, you will need to do this work because, like you said, we've been socialized in this culture. Most of us are carrying at least some of that baggage along the way, unless your parents were rock stars, which I'm envious.
Right. Right. I know. Right. So this, as you're talking, I'm also thinking about right now during COVID, and this episode is coming out later on, but I'm sure COVID's still going to be going on. And I feel for so many parents who are like just constantly in a heightened state of stress.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's something that I've observed as well, that you, when you're already in that heightened state of stress, it's so much easier to get triggered.
Yeah.
And so, and that recovery period is longer, that you're trying to like cope with that trigger and that reaction that you had. So what are some ways that we can work as parents to alleviate some of this stress so that we can be more self-aware, be more controlled of ourselves, recognizing in ourselves things that we need to do our own internal work about? Where do we start?
Yeah, you bring up such an excellent point because all of this stress of parenting is always there, but I think particularly in this time of pandemic and coronavirus and being shut in, just everything is multiplied. You know, one of my friends calls it like this is like transition and change on steroids, and it really is. I mean, it's so hard. So I'd say the first thing is, you know, if we can first of all just try to, and I know people are probably doing this already, is cut each other some slack. You know, we're going through, and I looked up the word in the dictionary, the word trauma, which is defined as a deeply distressing or disturbing experience. OK, I think we can all agree that this pandemic qualifies. So guess what? We're all having some kind of traumatic stress response. Now, for some people, it's a post-traumatic stress disorder. So other people might be growth, but we're all dealing, and everyone deals with trauma in a slightly different way. There's no one size fits all. So that being said, you know, a couple of basic things I would start with is do what you can to do to take care of your physical body, right? So, because the emotions come out of your physicality. So whether that's making sure you get enough sleep, you know, there's been a great phrase that's come up this year. You may have heard it, doom scrolling, right? So don't be like mindlessly scrolling. And I was doing it like late at night, like looking on my phone, like, because there's in the crisis, like, what new news is there? Like, is there a cure? Is there this? Like, yeah. Doom scroll, like, you know, and then it's like, there's so much negativity out there, but like, and I get that I need to stay informed, but do I need to stay informed 10 hours of the day on my phone or my computer? Probably not. So finding what are the things that are going to feed your negativity and then thinking about, whoa, I need to put some boundaries in around that. So I'd start with things like sleep. I'd start with things like healthy food. I'd start with things like exercise, you know, movement, somehow just to kind of ground your physiology. Then the next step beyond that is just checking in with people, like, you know, and first of all, with Zoom, you can do this with other people, like getting out of your little bubble, like I'm trapped inside, I can't, is just checking in with people and having the deeper, honest conversation, you know, usually starting with a question like, how are you feeling? And not like, I'm fine, how are you? But like, really, mm-hmm. No, really, how are you feeling? And even with the family, like having, and if you need to do it in a structured, intentional check-in way, all right, we're gonna have a family meeting. How are people feeling today? And, you know, just to take the time for everyone to have one person speak at a time so that we have equal airtime. So mom and dad or whoever is there aren't dominating the conversation, and just letting people have some space and just go, I hear you. Because really at our fundamental core human need, we all want to be seen. We all want to be recognized. We all want to be heard. We want to be valued and appreciated, you know, and it's so important for us. And I think especially as parents with our children right now, is psychologists call it normalizing, right? It's a fancy word for saying what you're going through is normal. And the fact is right now, it is totally okay not to feel okay. I mean, our world has been turned upside down, left and right. So yeah, for sure. So help others to do that. And in the same time, reach out and get help yourself. So like whoever, your peer group, whatever that might be, your friends, whatever kind of group you have, and get a Zoom group. I mean, I'm on probably like 4 different groups a week and I teach this stuff, right? But I know that I can't just be like, well, I've got this all figured out and I'm going to be fine. Like I need support. This has been tough. We all need connection. So finding people who can support you in that way too is a really good place to start.
So cool. So good. So good. Okay. Alan, this is amazing. I love talking with you. This is just so many amazing nuggets and plenty to take away from this on how we can just dismantle the power struggles of our families and nurture ourselves, set clear boundaries, and, you know, have reasonable choices available to our kids and positivity, praise. I just love all those things you talked about and covered in this episode. So tell us what's coming up next for you. Where else can we learn about you? Okay, what's your project coming up?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm still continuing to basically promote the book. So the book came out this year on March the 24th, right as things shut down. So I've been kind of pivoted to doing all virtual, so hence podcast conversations a lot. So yeah, so that's the big thing going on. And I'm talking with groups about it, whether it's around parenting or in industry, talking in organizations. So doing a lot of talking and doing some group coaching and things like that. Yeah, if people want to find out more about that, it's because my name is a little hard to spell. I have a website that is really simple, which is www.crackingtheleadershipcode.com, which it takes you right to the book page. You can learn all about the book there. You can actually download the first chapter and get a preview of the book and learn more about it. And that'll link you right to my website and learn about the other services that I'm offering. I'll be going and offering various events for individuals and teams and organizations, all under the umbrella of helping people to become better leaders.
So awesome. And such an important skill. As parents, it infuses everything that we do. I mean, we just need to have good leadership skills because, like you said, when we are good leaders, it will socialize our kids to also be good leaders and not, we just need to stop this cycle.
Yeah.
Power struggle cycle. This, I'm the boss and you're the peon of my life, right? Yeah. I mean, we're stewards of our children. We're not the boss. They are individuals who have a purpose and a mission in their lives. And it's our job to mentor them and to serve them in that capacity.
Yeah. You know, and as you say that, it just reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Albert Schweitzer, which I think is really fitting about the idea that parents are leaders. And this is a quote from Albert Schweitzer. And he says, example is not the main thing in influencing others. It's the only thing. So, you know, if you want to be a better leader, hold up the mirror to yourself first. And that is the infinite challenge for all of us.
Thank you so much, Ilan. That's awesome. That's so perfect.
Thank you,
Jordan. And that's a great way to conclude. This is just amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Thank you.
Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of Family Culture Movement. Don't miss the next episode with Krister Ungerbach, who's the author of 22 Talk Shifts, and you will learn about some incredible breakthroughs you can have in your personal and professional relationships just by changing the way you speak. Again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Help more people find the show. Download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Success Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember to set your intentions for your family culture and lead your family toward your vision of success.